comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous planet we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I know that you could be doing a million other things, but you chose to be here, and I appreciate that. I appreciate it very much. We are here because you have a right to know and because you matter. Let me remind you very quickly of some important things taking place here at the Kevin Smith Show, coming up very, very quickly here at the Kevin Smith Show. First of all, the seminar. In our members community, every once in a while, I present a seminar for free for the members. And the reason that I do that is to say thank you for being members, okay? So that's coming up. As a matter of fact, it's coming up real quick. Be sure that you go to our announcements forum in the members community, if you're a member, and read the announcement about this upcoming seminar. I would not put off reading about that. If you are a member, if you're a new member, even if you're an old member, and you have never read the new members info file, even though every time you log in, there's a notice right there that says, be sure you read the new members info file, and you've never done it, I would recommend you do that, or you're never going to be able to figure out how to get to the announcements form, and it's so simple. It's not complicated at all, be sure you do that. Okay? Now, I also want to highlight the Alternative Universe Eye Conference that's coming up. The Alternative Universe Eye Conference is really special. It's something very, very different. In that it is a conference, it's a live conference, but instead of you having to come to the conference comes to you. Yeah, I know there are all these other conferences out there, and some of them pretty good, and they have streaming live video, but you're just a spectator on the sideline watching that conference. And, you know, the speakers don't even ever speak to you. Well, this one is geared entirely to you. It is live. It is streamed live, 100% streamed live. And so, you know, it's different. And great speakers, great presentations, question and answer period after each speaker. And guess what? The price of that conference is phenomenally low. You know, it's only going to cost you, are you ready for this? It's only going to cost you $10. $10. Now, I calculated what it would cost to go to most conferences, just an average. And the thing about it is, well, you know, the conference tickets usually cost you a bunch. And then on top of that, you know what happens? Yeah, you got to buy plane tickets, hotels, and meals. This is $10. All right, we'll be back right after this. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. For those who are watching our TV channel, you will understand as this show progresses the weird glitch that took place right at the beginning of the show, and I'll address that as this show progresses. Those of you on the radio never knew anything was going wrong, but it was. You know, each night here at the Kevin Smith Show, we explore and discuss the world of the strange and the unexplained. And among other things, we talk about UFOs, extraterrestrials, anomalies in space and on other planets in our solar system. And among those other things that we discuss, we also discuss strange anomalies and mysteries here on our planet, mysteries such as USOs, unidentified submerged objects. You know, one of our guests on this show was a whistleblower named Command Sergeant Major James Norton. Command Sergeant Major James Norton spoke out about a UFO battle alleged to have taken place at Fort Benning, Georgia, in the 1970s. As a result of going public, he was detained, he was threatened, had his camera memory sticks confiscated, and was put under surveillance. And then he died a very mysterious death within 6 months of going public. Shortly after his death, only 2 or 3 days after his death, I was in contact with a man who said that he had been a close friend of Command Sergeant Major Norton for 20 years. He said James was never in the military, but that he had been. He said that James Norton was given to telling tall tales, but everyone loved him, implying, of course, that everything Norton had told us about the Fort Benning incident was false. Interesting, though, this week I received another communication from this guy who says he was Norton's friend. And in this communication, he said that Norton was in the Army and was at Fort Benning. He said that he, the friend, was a warrant officer in Norton's unit and that he was present at Fort Benning the night of the UFO battle, and that the next day everybody was talking about it. He was not in that battle, but was in barracks, and said that they heard the noise, it woke everybody up, and they went and looked, and they could see flashes of light, but then they were ordered to get back in their bunks. This world of ufology is a world of ever-shifting sands, my friends. But his story now confirms Command Sergeant Major Norton's testimony. Well, tonight, we're going to dive into yet another truly mysterious, and I might say disturbing, story. It is a story so fraught with danger that I have refused to even hint at what it was about prior to showtime tonight. In fact, right now, you don't know what it's about. And I want to advise you in advance that my guest is not in the USA, and that when he and I talked about this 2 days ago, our conversation, our communications were severely interfered with. That could happen here tonight, and as we went on the air, I can tell you someone decided they were going to jam up our TV signal. And it took us down, took us off the air on the TV channel for a couple of minutes. We are back up, and hopefully we can stay back up. It was up, and then it jammed. And, you know, that's kind of odd, isn't it? I mean, there it was. You were watching, you were listening, and then it just jammed up. Well, okay, it happened. When he and I talked, the interference was obvious, and it was obvious to me that someone did not want this story out. someone did not want you to know this story and did not want you to hear this story tonight and have already tried to keep that from happening. At least that's certainly how it appears. A few months ago, we had a guest on this show who stunned the world by reporting to us live from on board a ship in the Baltic. And he talked to us about this USO, this unidentified submerged object in the Baltic. Months before CNN decided to run anything on it, we had someone on the scene. Someone who volunteered to tell us what was going on. And he told us some amazing things about the attempted discovery and recovery, if you will, of that object. It was discovered, of course, months earlier by a treasure hunter using sonar. But this team had sent down submersibles to try and get a look at it. And the submersibles had been destroyed. And he stunned the world with that. On another show, he told us about his own Viking ship's encounter with a USO. And we will be talking about that some again tonight. But since those shows, he's been followed by MIBs, Men in Black, who, by the way, have been caught on camera by TV news crews over there. He's been threatened via email. He's been threatened via telephone. And now things have really turned disturbingly dangerous. His ship was destroyed by sabotage. I'd like to welcome to the show, once again, Captain Robert McDonald. Captain, welcome back to the show. It's good to have you back with us.
It's good to be back with you. It's good to be back anywhere. I've had a hard last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I understand that you have. As a matter of fact, you went out of country and visited some folks in Ireland, and when you returned, you were ill and had to be hospitalized, right?
That's correct, Kevin. It was a strange pneumonia. They couldn't quite identify, but I had a very odd pneumonia. And it was very, very, very touch and go for a week. And they got me back on my feet. The Dutch doctors are very good with that. However, they never did identify the strain of pneumonia. They just said it was. And while I was in the hospital, well, I came back home, I started recovering, and then I was received a message, I guess you would call it a hack message, of a ha-ha-ha, happy sailing, which really confused me. And I just relaxed, and then I had a phone call from the media group over here that said, hey, Cap, you know your boat's underwater? And that was the first I heard of it.
Okay, you were in the hospital when you got this?
No, I had just returned home. Mm-hmm. It was the day I returned home from the hospital. The moment I turned on my computer, the hack message was sitting there on the front screen.
And the hack message said?
Yeah, just ha ha ha, happy sailing, Captain. Uh-huh. I had a particular name on it, which really confused me. But I ignored it, of course, you know, happy sailing, ha ha ha. I don't know, maybe I missed part of the message.
Okay, so the next thing that happens is you get a telephone call saying your ship...
seconds.
Yeah, your ship has been sunk.
Sank. Yeah, had been sank. Mm-hmm. Well, the first response to me is that's impossible, because when I built the ship, you know, we built it with 5,000 kids. We took it to technical schools and colleges to build the underside of the ship. It was basically a floating army tank. I said, you don't understand, there's... the size of the ice cream sticks, that's 1 inch thick. You have seven layers of epoxy. For those of you who don't know, that's a very strong liquid, almost stronger than fiberglass. It's very bendable. It's inside the ship, which I never told anyone. That was inside the ship, strictly for strength, for hitting icebergs and for who knows what in the Atlantic. And we had placed a layer on the bottom side, I guess, at water level. And on top of that, we had a very strong anti-plant called anti-fouling made of copper. Copper in the paint, which has extremely hard. It's extremely hard substances. All of these things, and the only way that I knew the ship could be sunk is if you actually walked inside the hull, put a shotgun straight up against the ship's hull, and pulled the trigger with both barrels. Even then, I mean, I just can't imagine what could do it. Even then. If it did that, even with a shotgun, I don't know that it would break a hole in it, mm-hmm. big enough to sink the ship.
So when did this happen? When what was the date of when you got notified that it was sunk?
We're talking 2 weeks ago.
And it was in harbor, or was in port?
It was in port. It was tied up to the docks, safe as it could ever be. Nothing unnormal about it. It had been in the water since our USO experience, if you remember that. But for a lot of you who don't know, I had a USO experience in the ship. We had left it in the water from that time. That was a couple of years back. We never removed it from the water. We just placed it into the canal. We went from the sea into the canals, which is fresh water, and sailed it to the center of the country where it sits at the moment. In fresh water, we then moved it into a lake. A freshwater lake for its rest for the winter. So allowing it to rest for the winter, as long as there's no passing ships, I shouldn't be a threat to it. And we just allowed it to rest there. And of course, I had my surgeries and a lot of other things since that time. And we used the ship for we would take the ship out now and again for ghost ship hunting, and we would take it out for, or we call them phantom ship hunting, and we would take it out again for our different experiences, taking out for taking toys to children. We had parked it earlier, half a year ago, and just left it there very comfortably. Mm-hmm. But the ship has never left the water in 2 years. Well, okay. The ship had sunk, it had went underwater, and I had contacts. Lots of people have contacted me about lifting the ship and having a look at it, which I agreed. So we pumped the water out of the ship. I kept insisting it's rainwater, because how could it be anything else? There is no way, first of all, nobody can enter a cabin of my ship, and they wouldn't know how to go below deck and blast a hole in it. Because the ship was tied up in port, there's no way we could have struck anything. So it was really, really a strange situation for me. And we had received, well, you remember, Kevin, from our show, a lot of interference and threats and messages and things. Of course, you ignore those. They have nothing to do with the ship. Really, you ignore those. They had nothing to do with the ship. And we had them lift the ship very slowly. With the inspectors on hand. You have to have inspectors there when a ship sinks. So we lifted the ship very slowly, and they found a debris field in the bottom of the hull, which was making no sense. Before they lifted the ship, the debris field went inwards into the ship, which meant something happened outside of the ship, under the water. So when they lifted the ship completely up, we saw the hole. It was some type of unknown explosive from the outside of the ship that blasted inwards. And it's one of the first things we noticed. And then we heard a cracking noise as they were moving the ship outwards. And then the ship literally had broken in half from what appeared to be a perfectly cut, like a perfect cut from a knife, like a surgical knife. It was surgically done. It couldn't have been more of a perfect cut, the way the ship fell apart. A rib. Now, we have one rib in there that was almost 8 inches thick, just solid, thick, interweaved wood. It literally was cut in half, and nobody had ever seen anything like that before. It was literally cut in half. The only jagged, broken pieces were the ice cream sticks on the very outer side of the hull And that's because they seem to have been fused or cooked together.
Okay, now, we have a break coming up here in 3 minutes. Just under 3 minutes. So let's review kind of quickly this USO experience. This happened a couple of years back, and you had decided to sail, I think, to England. And you were going to use an old Norse, old Viking route. And you plotted out that route and headed off, and something happened out there. What happened?
Well, we left Devil's Gate, and we had left on our route journey, a route that nobody takes from a harbor that few people, big ships take, and in a direction that, yeah, there are no oil rigs. Absolutely nobody will go near. And that's the Devil's Gate route, or the Flying Viking boat. It was on the photograph of the painting we had and the maps. And yeah, we had a USO experience. We had it was a mess. We had a USO come up under us, stay up under us for a while. We actually felt the sensation of floating, and then the ship suddenly hit the water. We had airplanes chasing this USO and other ships, and it was pretty much a nightmare, where the Viking ship had actually broken its mast, and the rudder was literally sliced in half under the water.
Okay, now there was another ship that came out of the normal shipping lanes to observe you, and why did he do that, and what did he observe?
Well, you know, the shipping lanes, for the ones who don't know, it's like a highway for ships. They're going back and forth all the time, back to back, these giant tanker ships. And in Norway, they had a story from their childhood and legends of flying Viking ships. This is from 800 years ago. So there's songs about it and books about it, children's books. And it's just passed on from family to family. This particular captain said we had lit panic flares at the time, but that's not why he pulled out. He could barely see those. He uses binoculars and what have you on the ship and cameras to look over at us. He saw something that made him pull out of the lanes, and it wasn't the flares. It was the ship was floating, and what he told people, the ship was floating, just like in the old Viking story. So he pulled out to come witness this for himself.
Not floating in the water, floating in the air.
In the air, yeah.
All right, we have a break taking over. We'll pick up with the Viking ship in the air when we come back. Don't go away, folks. We'll try to be back.
To the Kevin Smith Show.
All right, welcome back. We're talking with Captain Robert McDonald, and what we are hearing from him, we have heard from him before, and what we are hearing from him now is both mysterious and disturbing, because what he has told us before already caused him to be subjected to being followed by men in black. It's already caused him to be subjected to having both emailed threats and telephone threats. And now his ship has been sabotaged and sunk. And we're going back and recovering a little bit of that information that perhaps brought all of this on. So, Captain McDonald, you were telling us about the USO experience, and that is a couple of years ago, and you were sailing an old Viking route, and with your Viking ship, which is a very famous Viking ship, by the way, folks. This is a ship that was built by children all over the place, and they brought their popsicle sticks, their ice cream sticks, and they were used in the construction of this Viking ship, and it was inspected and declared seaworthy, and it was also inspected by people who know what all the Viking parameters were for a ship. And they looked it over and they said, this is exactly how a Viking ship would have looked. This is, it's built correctly. So now they're sailing to England. They're going to deliver some toys to some children in England. And all of a sudden, their ship strikes something in the water, breaks off the rudder, lifts their ship into the air. The Viking ship is now lifted into the air. Although I think it's correct, isn't it, Captain, that you and the crew were not aware that you were in the air. Is that right?
We had no idea. Absolutely none. We were busy on deck. I was, as a captain, I was busy trying to save everyone's lives, and they were busy obeying my orders to keep the whole boat together because we were 80 miles out, which is a long way, and a long way down if the ship goes down. So it was basically for me on deck, and the rest of us was staying alive.
So there's another ship. He's in the shipping lanes. And they noticed your flares, but that isn't why they came out of the shipping lanes. They came out of the shipping lanes because through their binoculars they could see your ship was in the air.
That's correct. Well, for a super large ship like that to come after a small ship, that's no. They haven't. It takes too long. Their ship is too big. It's five stories tall. It's a very complex ship to just turn. You can't turn on a dime. It's very complex to turn. When they decide, the second they decide to turn the ship to go help anyone or to go in that direction, it's costing them money from that very moment every time they stop the ship to turn it. It's a big ordeal. It takes more than just the captain behind the wheel. It takes, you know, all 250 people to turn that ship, to just get the ship going. They turned out of the shipping lanes because of they were Norwegians, the entire crew, and from their childhood stories growing up of flying Viking ships in that particular area. And they decided to come investigate what they seen was a Viking ship above the water. They had turned on all their video cameras during the approach and were filming in real time with all the cameras on board they had available, which is all on the bridge, facing outwards. And they said we were 4 feet out of the water. Absolutely 4 feet out of the water. They didn't understand why the sea was totally glass around us when it was horrible chops and winds at the time period. And well, they just found it all amazing. It made the whole Viking ship look magic to them, so they wanted to see it for themselves.
Well, yeah, I can imagine that they would. Now, you found out about all of this once the investigation, which is normal anytime there's any kind of mishap at sea, there's an investigation, there's an inquiry to find out what has happened. And it was this investigation that turned up the information you've just shared, because that was his testimony, right?
That was it. He made the testimony. They said the big freighter captain, and they told him, no, you did not see it. Go about your business. They didn't realize he had filmed it. They said, no, you didn't see. You just thought you saw this. It didn't happen, sir. Go about your business. These are the gentlemen in black. And they told us we did not see a USO. We did not see the birds in the air, the airplanes chasing this object that was under our ship. We had simply hit a container.
80 miles out to sea, and you hit a container.
That can move 14 knots with the ship, and then outrun an F-14, A container that can outrun. Now, remember that. It's a container that can outrun an F-14.
Okay. No. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
The gentleman laughed at the time. But.
Yeah. And they told you that was what you had to tell the press, right?
Yeah, they told me I had to tell the press we hit a wild floating container.
Mm-hmm. And these were the guys, the men in black?
Right. Mm-hmm. They had seized all the world media's cameras on the ship. In fact, every piece of every camera there was. But that's okay with us because the everything digital on the ship, including cameras, broke, permanently broke.
Mm-hmm.
Everything broke.
So the ship was inspected, like, and everything was fine. It was repaired. You put the rudder back on. It was inspected. It was declared seaworthy.
Yeah. Yeah. We had the ship reinspected, and they reinspected and redeemed it seaworthy again. And so we set about our missions again.
Okay. Now, this ship, as I said, folks, it's a Viking ship. It's built to Viking specifications, although on board you did install some modern navigation, electronics, communications, etc., right?
That's right. We had all the modern, most of the modern electronical equipment on board that any ship could have, and then some for our ghost ship hunting. We had plenty more things that nobody knows about on board, electronic equipment.
All right, so after they deemed it ready to sail again, you did sail, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We made many, many trips around and down Europe and had many other unique experiences. That's when we started our... We started toning down the... to calm down these gentlemen in blacks. Our crew and me and other people were being threatened so much, we decided to change the pace and we're going ghost ship hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And that really did, for quite a while, really did calm down the pace. Until they realized we were half and half. We would tell them we're going ghost ship hunting until we left harbor, then actually went back into that area many other times.
All right, let's talk about those threats, and let's be specific about some of these threats. First of all, I think we should remind the audience that after you were on this show the first time, where you were on board a recovery ship in the Baltic, and you reported live to us from there about their efforts to go down and see what was this big, round, circular object on the floor of the Baltic that everybody's heard about and that now CNN has finally reported on 6 months after we did.
Yeah. Yeah, it took them half a
year. The next morning, you had, either that next morning or the next one, within 48 hours, you had a major news crew talking to you, and they had heard about this on the Kevin Smith Show, and they wanted an interview with you, and you said, well, if you really want a big story,
that's it.
Point your cameras at those guys. Tell us about that. What did you tell them?
That was so much fun. At that time, I saw a threat coming my way. Because I saw these two gentlemen walking, and in black, in the black jumpsuits, you know, our buddies, blue berets and black jumpsuits with the little meteors on their shoulders and on the hat. I seen them walking towards me, but it was the one further in back of them that disturbed me, because he apparently had a pistol out and cocked and in his hand. He was walking about, I don't know, 40 feet behind them, and they were all walking directly at me. And I said, you know, I looked at the crew. I said, yeah, my story is really cool, but if you want a really good story, see these gentlemen in black. Nobody knows who they are or where they're coming from, but one of them has a gun. Oh, and they turned their cameras, and they forgot. I love the news. They forgot I even existed. They ran directly for these guys with their cameras, and these guys did a complete U-turn and started going the other way. And then there was three vans in the background. With no markings, solid black vans with no tags. They decided to leave the area, which is okay with me. I didn't even notice they were there. They pulled out of parking lots in about four different directions, four different areas from where we were, and just left really fast with wheels peeling. Wind up their three buddies, which CNN was chasing down. To give you a little bit of the exciting show, I found it quite fun when the media's van actually managed to pick up their crew and go and chase.
Now, explain that to me again.
And see the gentleman in black robot. Yeah, the television crew went and...
Well, you might be interested in knowing, we just got interrupted. Your audio just got interrupted, so tell us again. The television crew did what?
TV van. which I mentioned to you the next day because I found that entirely funny. But they found out it was a better story. I guess they never shared that story with anyone, but they knew the Baltic Sea story had teeth. And that was prior to their release by what, Kevin, was it 2 months, 3 months?
Prior to the CNN, yeah, about 3 months.
Yeah, prior to their release. So they know, they knew the story, they had heard about the story, they heard it on this show, they didn't know, you know, they were kind of like, yeah, well, how real could it be? It doesn't sound like a newsworthy story. Well, they learned really quick it's a newsworthy story. And I was able to speak with the reporter, the international reporter, I guess you call him the anchor, not the person on TV, but the anchor, the one who just makes decisions. I said, what made your decision to follow this up? He said, well, we were shot at.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was shot at, literally. The band they were chasing literally hit the brakes, turned sideways, and the door opened, slid open, I understand, they started shooting. And, well, that would work. That would work for me.
I mean, well, yeah.
You have a real story on your hands.
Well,
so, and for their own safety, when they called me back, for their own safety, what to do, I said, release the story. You know, come on. What should you do to keep yourself safe? Release the story. They'll back away from you. And they did. That worked exceptionally.
All right.
We're working on getting the footage back from me, my old footage.
Okay, now, as I understand it, this footage... Well, I'm the footage that was taken by the other ship when your ship was in the air. Mm-hmm. We're going to come back to that in just a moment. But let's go back to the day a couple of weeks ago when they tried to lift your ship, did lift your ship out of the water. They wanted to inspect it, do the investigation. A couple of things you told me that are pretty interesting about that. First of all, you've already mentioned they did see where a small explosive was used on the bottom of it to blow a hole in the bottom of it. Well, we have a break taking over. When we come back, I want to go back to that day when they lifted that ship. Some interesting stuff happened. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. When we went away for break, Captain, I had said, let's go back to that day when they lifted the ship out of the water to inspect it. When they did that, there was a man standing right there in the crowd, and his job was, his profession is that he junks out junk ships. He takes them apart, he disassembles everything, and then what's left goes in the junk pile somewhere, it's recycled somewhere, and he's standing in the crowd, the media's standing around, and they caught him on their cameras and mics saying something. What was it he said?
He was helping the fire marshals and inspectors. He was there, like, just... observing, actually, at the moment. And there was, well, every media camera, television camera, and photographer and news agency available that could show up on short notice, that's all of them from Holland, were at the scene when it happened. When the ship had broken in half, he looked over there and said, this isn't happening. This is not possible. He said, take a look at this. This is not how a ship breaks in half. And he explained to them, look, it looks like it was cut with a knife, like a hot knife going through butter. This can't happen, but here it is. That's the way he just didn't know what to think about it.
All right, now the inspectors that did the investigation found this to be very, very odd as well, and they also found something very anomalous about the paint that they thought was very odd. Tell us about first the paint, and then we'll come back to this this sort of incision in the ship. But tell us about the paint first.
Right. They took the boat completely out of the water and placed it on land at the marina, where everybody could walk around it, of course, and inspect it. And they noticed the paint on the underside. Now, anti-fouling paint, for those who don't know, that's better known as anti-plant paint. It is known to last 12 years. You only need to paint your boat with it every 12 years. It's that hard, that solid. It's got that much copper in the paint. It doesn't react to cold, ice, or sun. Nothing can affect this stuff. It stays on your boat solid. And it had been seared. It had been burnt the entire length of the ship at the waterline. And the paint, it takes a blowtorch to make this paint come off. You just don't take a painter's heater gun and remove it. It takes extreme high heat. But this paint was curled up all the way down the ship, just burnt to pieces. There was some four points on the boat that was seared white. It was so hot. It was seared white. Well, the inspectors, they were just completely confused and baffled at Captain Raw, what's going on here? This is for this kind of heat in the water. If it was electrical, you wouldn't be alive. We don't understand what's going on here. And they had inspected it and tested it and learned that, in their opinion, in their professional opinion, they're still confused, Kevin. Right now, to this moment, they're still very confused on it. This also can't happen. Unless, he said, this could happen if the ship was out of the water, floating. If the ship was literally out of the water, then, even then, they said that would make it. If it was out of the water, then it was suddenly cooled instantly. It would make that paint curl. So they're at a loss. They said unless this ship was in the air and put to extreme heat, this couldn't be happening. It still couldn't happen because the ship would explode into flames for this paint to be curled up like that. They took a blowtorch in a test. They had brought a blowtorch out during the test. This was a few days later. And they actually put a welder to it to make the paint curl. They heated it and cooled it real fast to make a piece of paint curl on the upper side of the ship. Now, the upper side of the ship, above the waterline, the paint was perfect. So, and then they decided, let's test this paint that's perfect to see, you know, how much heat it takes to make sure the paint wasn't defective. But no, the paint was perfect. They did make it curl, but they took a blowtorch and... Mm-hmm. Some sort of an ice spray to make it curl up. So they had their ideas going. But they said the ship had to have been out of the water in order for this to happen. And it had to have been dropped back in the water instantly in order for this to happen. But for the amount of electric to make this paint curl, the ship should have exploded into flames. I mean, it just been evaporated in seconds, and well, it didn't. Of course, that didn't happen. Here we are.
Well, there was a time when this ship was in the air.
Yeah, that was what was claimed by the captain. Of course, we felt an impact. We felt I mentioned that in your show. We felt like the ship suddenly dropped to the water, and yeah. But we thought that was just some sort of an illusion of what was going on that day. Nobody really had an answer for that. But according to the Norwegian captain, we were 4 feet above the waterline, up in the air, uh-huh. In his video footage.
What's happened to that video footage?
Yeah.
What has happened?
Sorry.
What happened to his video footage?
He still has it. His video footage, he immediately had them stow the video footage away. His ship was boarded, and there was nothing to confiscate there. There was nothing to be taken because he said, what video footage? Yeah, there was nothing to confiscate. They couldn't find any footage to confiscate. They confiscated, I guess you would call it a blank card in the cameras he had on board the ship that stared outwards. So they saw nothing on that. So he was smart in removing that card, that photo card.
Who boarded his ship and did that?
He explained the same thing we had. The gentleman in black uniforms. They came up on a gunboat, a military gunboat. This is far away from me. A military gunboat boarded the ship and to seize whatever. Mm-hmm. And he didn't know, and they didn't say. And they didn't identify what country they were from, but the battleship was a genuine battleship. And so he, of course, he's obligated to stop and let them do whatever.
But now, wait a minute. Wait. There was a battleship that they came up in?
They were aboard a battleship. This was a battleship that stopped this freighter.
And this battleship had no markings on it?
None. No country, no name. They looked for a name on the ship. There was no name, no country. And you're talking about more than just a captain. You're talking about 200 crewmates that had to come aboard, had to come above deck from when the ship stopped. Everybody had to come above deck. The captain made the order. His entire crew came above deck, which is at least 200 people. So that's a little bit too many witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
The ship had no flags and nothing. Nothing to identify themselves.
No,
they all wore the same uniforms, pretty much the same as the gentleman in black and the Air Force-looking jump uniforms, jumpsuits.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, they told them to go about their way. They told the captain. They made quite a few threats to him.
All right.
And to be quiet.
All right. I want to go back to the threats. And we're going to come back to this incision around the belly of this ship. But we will do that in just a bit. I want us to get to the threats. And I've just looked at the clock, and I can see we're only a couple of minutes from the next break. What was the first threat that you got, and how did you get it?
Well, this recently, or
no, the first threat you got, the first one. How did you get it?
Okay, that was in the North Sea. That was after we had our experience. We came back in, and after they had told us, you know, we were going to go back out to the media, and we're going to tell all the world media, at this point it was the world media, that it was a floating container.
Mm-hmm.
And that was going to be our story. And we would all find it very unpleasant futures if we didn't agree with them.
Mm-hmm.
So
they said that to you face to face?
Yeah, they said that to the entire crew and me face to face.
And this was the men in black?
Yeah, that's correct. So I had no choice. I went out there and I said, okay, I've made it more of a humorous. My crew refused to speak to anybody. But as captain, I have to protect, of course, my crew and ship. I have to think of that first. So I went out there to the media and I said, okay, folks, here's the story. A container chased us down at 14 knots. Hit our ship, disabled us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I said. That's literally what I said to the world media. But their footage, because of my statements, their footage had been taken. And you'll notice that if you folks Google in Ice Cream Stick Viking Ship on Google or YouTube, take your pick, you can see the whole world media following us out into the Atlantic or into the North Sea one way. And you do not hear, did they arrive, what happened next? You do not see a follow-up. Which, if you know anything about the world media, that's very weird in itself, to release a global story live and then suddenly you drop the whole subject.
All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and for those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're delighted you are here. My very, very sincere sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away from that first hour. You know, I tell you, every night you've missed, you know, universes of information, and it's absolutely the truth, and you know, this is multiple universes of information here, and you'll be crying for years now, but we're glad you're here now. And we're talking with Captain Robert McDonald. Captain Robert McDonald has been relaying to us his story, an amazing and I have to say very disturbing story of harassment, threats, and now sabotage that destroyed his ship. And why? Well, we'll get into perhaps why. I think you can probably figure it out, but we'll get into perhaps why a little bit later. But we were talking about these threats, and you've received, Captain, threats via telephone. Am I correct? Hang on just a second. It would help if I turned your volume on. Okay, you have received threats via telephone?
Yeah, on telephone, computer, and I've had them walk straight up to me.
Mm-hmm. And when you say computer, are we talking about email?
I guess you could call it that. Email where I could be on, for example, Facebook or reading my emails, and an entire message comes across my entire screen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the last warning, and that's one that came over the screen. And always signed Rose. Always signed Rose. And the most recent one by phone came out of Langley, Virginia, where they said, okay.
All right, first. How do you know it came from Langley?
Oh, they identified themselves as being from there, and they gave me a way to look up the information to verify it through any means I wish, police or otherwise. And I had more than enough inspectors to get that done. So I had them verify it.
Okay.
It was absolutely from Langley, Virginia. They could even say whose office it came from.
So you know the name of the person whose office this call came from?
Yeah, we have that much information, right?
Well, what's the rank of this individual?
Commander of the base.
And what was the message?
Well, he clearly stated, now you have learned your lesson, now back away from these UFOs. USOs in the Baltic Sea and otherwise, he said he demands to have the GPS location. Now I'm obligated, and he demands to have the GPS locations of these objects, which, of course, at this point, I was so brokenhearted from my own ship, so hurt, so angry. I said, not a chance. I said, first of all, it's not my thing. I don't do deep sea dives. It has nothing to do with me. I'm a guest of another captain. An invitation only of another captain, and I can't tell you where these objects are because I haven't been there yet. So I can't give you any GPS locations. The ones I do know about, I'll take to my grave. You'll never know. And I said, it's really kind of neat how you did my ship. It was done in a neat way, but I tell you what, I have four more. They're in museums, and I can pull out any four and continue my work. You can't stop me. You can't stop my friends from doing their dive. It won't happen. You know, get with the program.
So what was his response to that?
He hung up.
Was there any kind of... You're not in the United States, and you haven't lived in the United States for over two decades now.
That's right.
So the country that you're living in, was there any kind of official response from them to this?
Yeah, yes, they did. When they located, they used the tracking numbers that we were given, and they sent their own reply. I don't have to. I'm a resident of Holland. Although I'm a U.S. citizen, I'm a resident in Holland and have been for two decades. You do not tell our people in Europe what to do, where to do it, how to do it, under any circumstances. This was a non-military, this was a political response, a non-military response. Militaries work closely with NATO over here, and so they shied away from that one. But I would assume they sent NATO the same message. I don't have to. Mm-hmm. Even if I knew exactly where these things were located, I don't have to give any information. I don't wish to. Not from Holland. So they pretty much in a very polite, political way told this individual in Langley exactly what he could do with it. So.
Okay. But you and the government of Holland have the name of this individual. Is that right?
We have the office.
Mm-hmm.
there's only one office like it. So we have the office, and the message was sent through that office politically.
All right.
These gentlemen in belt black and these other individuals, they know about them, but they do not belong to a country. That's a big problem.
Okay, if they don't belong to a country, who do they belong to?
Unspoken. Politically unspoken. I'll never know. You'll never know. They wouldn't say.
All right.
I asked if it's a branch of NATO, and the response was no. It's a separate organization. That's the only response I would get. Very well spoken.
So these men in black are not answerable to a country. They're not the official force of any country. But you've talked to them officially.
Officially, they don't exist.
And you've talked to them face to face, and they've threatened you face to face. Did they have American accents?
I've heard American accents. I've heard British accents. I've heard French accents. I've heard international, even a Chinese accent recently.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very international. But who are they? Where are they from? I mean, they don't answer to a country.
When the inspectors took a look at your boat, they pulled it up out of the water. It broke in half. They saw that there had been an explosive. They saw that the bottom of the boat was just cooked by something.
Yeah.
And said the only way that could happen is if the boat were up in the air, then you could have done this. Somebody could have done this to the boat, but if it's in the water, it couldn't be done.
Even if it were in the air, there's no way to cook the entire hull at one time, as badly as it was cooked on my ship, without sending the boat into just severe flames. So it's still a mystery.
Okay. And then when they inspected this incision around the belly of the ship where it broke in half, did the inspectors come to any kind of conclusion about what could have caused that, or did they speculate?
Of course they're inspectors. They have to speculate. That's all they have to go on right now, speculation. They were saying it's some kind of a laser, and it would have to be done underwater. And the harbor is so shallow where my boat was sitting, they don't know of any machine or dive machine that could do it. And they've never seen a cut like that. And they don't have an answer at the moment. There is no answer.
Did anybody speculate about any type of specialized explosive that could do that?
They did. On the main hull towards the back of the ship, at the back cabin, which is my cabin, the hole they found that blasted inwards from under the water. They only know of one type of explosive like that leaves absolutely no residual marks floating in the water or anywhere else, no blast marks, and that's used by intelligence agencies. And that's what they gave on that one. It's the only answer they could come up with, because there is no metal fragments in the wood itself, in the boat. There is no residual that's debris floating from the actual blast, what made the blast.
So have they determined anything about, I mean, what's their statement on what has happened to the ship?
Their statement is they don't have a clue. They're still looking into it. They know it's obvious what happened, but they don't have an answer how it happened or what explosive was used. There's no residual marks on the wood. They have nothing to go on, absolutely nothing. The wood that was blasted inwards was floating, which should have lots of residuals on it. You know, every explosion has a residual. This one didn't. And there, as far as the ship in half or the laser cut, there is something that does exist that doesn't leave any marks or residuals in the water or otherwise. And it's called string explosive. It's like a ball of string which you unwind. And you can actually, it's very sticky substance, as they told me. You can glue it to a straight line all the way around on the ship, and it would blast. It would make something similar to what we see with my ship, but not so, you know, accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And my ship is very accurate. It's a very obvious cut. But they're at a loss. They don't know at the moment. And that's very little evidence to go on. So they've never seen anything like this outside of a laser in a surgical room. They've never seen this on material. Now they're looking at a theory that it could have came from, was it airborne that cut the ship, and have something airborne that cut the ship, but that's not a possibility. If you look at all my decks and bulkheads and all the things I have that go below the deck, a human being can't just crawl down there and do that. If it were this tape they were talking about, they couldn't just do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's no explosive that could cut through two decks and the entire ship. They don't know of anything like that. But if it did exist, it would be with the intelligence agencies. That's for sure.
All right. Now, when you got this call from Langley,
mm-hmm.
They started out by saying that they got your ship. Is that right?
Well, it's yeah. You learned your lesson now, didn't you, about your ship? You know, you learned our warnings are real, and it was just the way of conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And this man, I could tell he was not like a private or a corporal. He was an extreme high rank. Mm-hmm. You could tell by his intelligence. And, however, every time I spoke, I tried to speak my mind. It's like he couldn't hear it or wouldn't hear it. In other words, I had nothing to say.
Mm-hmm.
But I was able to say, this is far, far, far from over.
So this is a guy in America receiving a paycheck from the American government at an American base where ostensibly there is a constitution, or there used to be anyway, a few years ago, and he's speaking to an American citizen, and he is admitting to having violated the Constitution. And he is, at that moment, violating your constitutional rights. Why not have file a complaint with the Justice Department, since you have his name and you have reports of these people, these inspectors in Holland and others, officials that dealt with him and responded to him. Why not file a complaint with the Justice Department against him for violation of your constitutional rights?
This is something we've looked at the moment. We've made our own threats. You know, I have political friends, too, in high places. And I now take their threats very seriously. This gentleman was threatening a warning, I guess you could say, warning an American outside the United States, which he has a right to do.
Well, you know, the president says he has a right to kill you, too.
Well, he, as I understand from this side, he, because he was speaking to an American citizen outside the United States, he can do just what he wants and say just what he wishes.
Mm-hmm.
That's the response I received. And that's also coming out of Washington, D.C.
Well, yeah, the president
and
now
what,
claims...
What's strange for me, Kevin, is for your listeners who don't know it, I'm still learning about UFOs. This was not a subject I was ever into until, you know, we actually had the USO experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was looking up USOs. As for all these military and all this other stuff going on around my subject, I still do not understand what it has to do with them.
Okay, but listen to what I'm saying.
Anything to do with them.
Listen to what I'm saying to you.
Mm-hmm.
You do not any longer have citizenship in the United States of America that you believed existed. It's gone.
No.
And the president now claims to have the authority to order assassinations of American citizens.
Well, as I was told,
you've got to be careful.
From the highest levels to make the call.
Mm-hmm.
The highest levels of government to make the call, or he wouldn't have done it. He had the green light, and he had to get that from the highest levels of government. That's the only way I'll make that statement.
Speaking of the highest levels of government, where you live, you are acquainted with the royal family, are you not?
Yeah. Queen Beatrix and her family. I've received a lot of letters from them. They support the children who made the Viking ship over the 2 years. It was made of the 50 million ice cream sticks, and she had sent some in herself, personally.
Uh-huh.
She has visited the ship more than once and sent more than once many letters. And recently, on the ship's breaking up, and the inspectors come actually from her side of the government. They're the top-of-the-line inspectors for maritime. My ship has been on display at the Maritime Museum. I have one on display there now, the European Maritime Museum. And my ships are well known for being historical for over here, and for the USA, actually, for the whole world, actually, historically, being built by children. And she, her family representatives kind of lost it when they heard this story.
Oh, it was, you know, like, it was like her ship got attacked.
Yeah. It's like the Dutch ship, the most famous Dutch Viking ship ever known. This particular ship, the Thor, is the most famous Viking ship literally on the internet ever in history of the world. And it ticked off more than one royal. I've heard from Norway, I've heard from the Belgian royal family, I've heard from everybody now, like condolences and support, letters of support. You know, whatever we can do, we can help you. But everybody seems to be afraid of this organization in black, whoever they are. They seem to instill fear in everybody. They have zero respect for anyone, absolutely none. They don't care about children, they just don't care. And they care, they have their agenda, and they're going to see it through, whatever that is. That mysterious agenda is political, which I'm not. It just goes from mystery to mystery, for me at least. I'm still trying to learn all this. What in the hell did I get into? You know, everything that happened to be in far as this USOs, and it's all been by accident. So, what have I got to do with any of it?
Welcome to what we live in daily.
I'm just learning this, Kevin. I'm just learning how deep this, I guess you call it cloak and dagger. Is that a correct statement to make?
Yes.
In the UFO world, this cloak and dagger with governments. It's very confusing for me, but
all right,
I can't
now,
tell you the warnings are real.
You've been told by this guy at Langley that you now see with your what happened to your ship, and our threats are not they're for real. We're not joking.
Yeah,
you've been told that basically, since you are an American outside of the USA, they can do anything to you they want to do. The political response from the Netherlands to this guy was stuff it. Although they didn't say it in those terms, the message was clear. So you add all that together, how safe are you?
Not. Absolutely not. But I've never lived my life on safe, you know, as being safe. I'm a stuntman. I've been a stuntman for 35 some odd years. I'm not about to, even though I'm retired from stunts and movies, I'm still have the same attitude. Come get me. You know, if you want me, come get me. You have no reason.
I really wouldn't challenge that. You know, I mentioned Command Sergeant Major James Norton at the beginning of this, and he made statements like that, and within 6 months, James Norton died an excessively mysterious death.
All right. Well, I didn't give you the most recent contact I had with Langley.
All right.
I was somebody had received the letter, and this was someone called an attaché to the commander, delivering a message. He said, okay, you know, our guard general commander has warned you. Now you've seen what happens with the boat. By the way, Mr. McDonald, how is your flu? That was frightening, Kevin. That was frightening. Because I literally almost died recently from that flu. And it's 7 short days. And pneumonia. It was worse than a flu. It was pneumonia. But it was a pneumonia they could not identify.
Do you know what happened to James Norton?
No, you were just explaining that.
James Norton was fine on one day, and the next day, literally, was so weak that he just couldn't hardly get up and walk and ask his family to take him to the hospital. He was diagnosed with cancer that he didn't have any pre-symptoms of, and here it was already to a stage where he was about to die from it. Within hours, they diagnosed him also with hepatitis C. Shortly after that, they diagnosed him with leukemia. And then shortly after that, He began to swell rather extensively, and at 6 o'clock in the next morning, he died.
That's very sad.
I'm not trying to frighten you. I am trying simply to inform you that these people aren't joking.
Firsthand. They're definitely serious. They know things they shouldn't know. For example, my pneumonia, what room I was in at the hospital, they were obviously paying very close attention to that, so they knew a whole lot about it.
They're mean, they're vicious, they're un-American, unconstitutional.
Well, they don't have to answer to anyone.
They answer to
evidently, they believe, and I know they're listening to this show, and I hope they listen to the recordings, but I want to make it very clear. I'm not sure what it was they think I saw in the North Sea, but I didn't. I have no idea what it could be. I'm no threat to them. I don't see myself as a threat to them as far as the USOs in the Baltic Sea and everywhere else, including the Caribbean. This is another group's quest. I was just invited to be on board and film it. And I'm still absolutely planning to do that. If I'm alive, I'm going to do that. It's coming up. It's this April. So it's still ongoing. Nothing's slowing down because, once again, it's not my show. It has nothing to do with my particular ships. And I have four more to go after, four more that is available to me. Also made of ice cream sticks.
Mm-hmm.
They're also world records. This subject, I don't know what it... The only thing I could do is trace back to the North Sea and my own experience with the USO. There was something they must think we saw that really disturbs them, and I can't even imagine what that is. I never understood this political side of it or this violent side of it, what they think I saw. What I don't understand it. I really honestly don't, and my crew can't come up with any answers as well. We're still learning about UFOs and USOs. So,
how is your crew responding to what's happened to you and the ship? Are they scared?
They were very frightened. I've learned recently. Recently died of mysterious circumstances. One was in a car accident, but he was completely alone in a very flat road on a very flat plane. His car wiped out, and he died. And the other died of a rare strain of pneumonia, which was never identified. And so we have, the crew that went into the North Sea and had the USO experience, we still have three left, and including myself, so there's four people out of the original six. So they're saying they're speaking. They're letting their captain speak more than that's me, and I'm allowed that.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back right after this.
You are listening to the Kevin Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Folks, before the show, the only notice I put out said I absolutely cannot talk about what's going to be on the show. You just have to be there. Do you now see? Do you now understand? It's not a game. It's not a game, folks. What we do is bring you information. This is the testimony of Robert McDonald, captain of the Thor. We've shown you on our TV channel pictures of the ship before, pictures of the ship now. You're hearing his testimony. It's not a game. Now, I don't want to sound unkind, and really, take this with a grain of salt. But there are a lot of shows out there where it really is pretty much of a game. This is not a game. This is serious stuff. And Captain McDonald is taking a great risk to tell you his story. I am taking a great risk to bring you this story. And we need you to stand with us. This is listener supported. And if you don't, we'll be steamrolled. If you don't stand with us and help us keep on the air, stay on the air, if you don't, and you think, well, let somebody else do it, we will be steamrolled, and this will all go away. And then where are you going to get the information? Where are you going to find a show that says you have a right to know and you matter and backs it up? Captain McDonald, do you personally, I know we were talking about your crew, and some of them are a little bit, have a little bit of anxiety, and two of them have died under mysterious circumstances. Do you yourself have any trepidation? I mean, are you, do you think, I asked you if you're safe, and you said, no, well, I'm not safe. Do you have any trepidation about all of this?
I do, but the truth of the story is more important than any threat, or truth is more important than my life. I mean, I've lived the truth with everything I've ever done, with the, my work with the children and everything they've done. To say nothing would be turning my backs on everyone, and I'm not willing to do that. I mentioned many times on this show that I absolutely hate governments who keep secrets, you know, from the people they represent. In this situation, for example, they must, in just my opinion, they must be spending multi-millions of dollars creating these organizations to stomp out the truth, which is silly. When they could
try
be spending the money on many other better things.
Yeah, try trillions of dollars.
I don't know. I'm just, like I said, I'm new at this. I know I can just estimate when you see a battleship what that would cost. And it's dedicated to whoever these are. Somebody spending a ton of money on just keeping stories like this silent, which I find silly. How about, you know, let's welcome our new neighbors, whoever they are, wherever they're from. I kind of like that idea. You spend a whole lot less money on a bundle of flowers. You know, welcome to our world. Seems like I would save them a ton of money, you know, since the world economy is supposed to be in crap. And it's probably in crap because of these expenditures on silly things. You know, for example, my ice cream stick boat and all the effort they went through to keep me quiet on what we obviously saw in the North Sea. You know, this is a unique experience for the world. Why don't they just say it out loud? It would save them a ton of money.
Well, then they wouldn't have a job.
I'm still learning all this, Kevin, but what I have done, and I want everyone to know this.
Even thugs have to have a job, you know.
There's something I want everybody, it's very important to me tonight, to have everybody listen. I have copied all of my information with complete details, including the, pay attention now, everybody, the captain's video. And secretly, I have received film footage from Reuters news agency on the day it all happened. You see, there was cameras on my boats, too, that were confiscated. We managed to get some bits and pieces of film footage, enough to make a one-hour story. We've copied this 7 times. I've delivered to 7 different people. Nobody knows who they are. Kevin's not one. I'll let you know up front. 7 different people have this information. One more thing happens to me. Just one more thing. Upset me in any direction, governments, whoever you are, this will become a global news story. And you cannot just walk away from it. This includes telephone recordings from Langley with the digital phone number on the screen. They cannot say they did a call, and we'll make this extremely public. I'm just saying it now. My boat is broken. You killed my baby. Now back off. That's all. Okay, Kevin. Now we can continue. Thank you.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Light is something cockroaches hate. Now, these are some vicious cockroaches, to say the least.
I've just learned that, how vicious. Yeah.
It is not beyond them at some point to decide, well, we're just going to take this guy's life and then we'll be done with him. So I think what you've done is quite a great insurance policy. And I didn't know that. I had no idea about that. I'm hearing about it now, just now, as you are. And I am not one of those people. But I think it's a great idea. I think it's a great insurance policy, because if there's anything they don't want exposure. They don't want
life. I look at it a little bit more than an insurance policy. I look at it now as my legacy. If they do something to me, this information that's going to be released by several different news agencies worldwide live will be my legacy, my gift to the world. So if they don't want that gift released, they had better back off.
I would not be surprised if you receive another telephone call from Langley.
I wouldn't. Not at all. But I'm prepared for it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm ready for it, so, as long as they know that.
One of the things that happens that's pretty interesting is when I look at the server logs, I can see what are the top cities, not just, I list the countries, the top 50 countries or so, in terms of where our audience is, but I can see the top cities. Unidentified government computers is in the top 10 cities. It's not a city. That's both in the U.S. and in Europe.
I can see on my text one message that came in during your break, Rose here. So she's definitely listening.
She is a he.
I'm really happy.
Yeah, she is a he.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure of that.
Whoever.
And what does this message say that came in during the break?
I'm here. That's all it says.
Hi, Rose.
Yeah. That's okay with me. I wanted Rose to hear that last message, so I'm sure she did now.
She.
And you notice this is the first time we've ever spoken, Kevin, without any real interference going on during our talk.
Yeah, we had some earlier.
Yeah.
We had some earlier. We don't have time for very many calls, but are you willing to take some calls?
Oh, I would enjoy that. I really enjoy that.
All right. I'm going to open up the telephone line. People have been trying to call, but, folks, it was more important for you to hear this story. All right. So, let's go to the telephone. It's 623-444-5889. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hello, Jerome.
Hi.
Hi, Jerome.
Captain McDonald, I want to tell you, first of all, I don't think you have an insurance policy, and I really believe that your gift to the world, you should get it out ASAP. I don't believe that these news organizations, if something would happen to you, are going to release this. I think all news organizations are controlled. And my question, I have several. Kevin knows I'm quite...
Well, pick one, because we don't have much time and there will be other people wanting to call. So pick one question.
Kevin. Okay. When you were in Holland and these men in black, these news organizations were filming the men in black, and they mm-hmm. were being shot at. What coverage did the news organizations give that part of the story?
I don't know. We don't get the same news you receive. CNN over here is called CNN International, and it's not the same CNN you have over there. And all news organizations that large work on the same way. That's Reuters news agency as well as Al Jazeera. They all work that way. So we're not receiving the same news you do in America.
Well, I
and you're not receiving our news
from
Men
in Black being filmed live, and I doubt even over there. That's just part of my story. I think it used to be...
Okay, wrap it up, Jerome, because we're so short on time.
Okay, Kevin, I'll just let someone else talk, because I could just go on. Thank you.
All right, thanks for the call.
Nice talking to you, Jerome.
Yeah, and I hate to do that, but, you know, I wanted everybody to get this story, and so it ran us longer before we opened the phone lines. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, John from Vancouver Island.
Hello, John.
Hello, John.
I'm just thinking the first I ever heard of a USO was from Bill Cooper.
Okay, and?
Well, that's what got Bill Cooper started, and the thing about him, Bill Cooper, was he was a pretty angry guy, and eventually he...
Did I miss the question?
No. Yeah. Do you have a question, John?
Question. let me think for a sec. Not so much a question as... I think what's protecting Captain McDonald is that he's not angry.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what his true insurance policy is.
Okay. Might be. Thank you for the call, John. And folks, let me apologize in advance for rushing you along here tonight, but we have to because we are going to run out of time. 623-444-5889. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Mike from Kentucky, Kevin.
Hello, Mike.
Hi, Mike. Hello, Captain. What about the possibility that the reason there's so much danger involved with this is those things on the bottom of the sea over there are actually disabled military craft that belong to the United States?
Well, you know, that's a possibility, but if that's true, they're off every major city in the USA at the moment, every coastal city. They're off every European city on the coastals. They found so many of these things. Last I heard, when we last did the Kevin Smith Show, was there was 19 reported, I think. Even CNN mentioned that. Now there's like 58 reported, all the way on off every major coast.
All right. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Ryan from Washington.
Hello, Ryan.
Hi, Ryan.
I kind of think that maybe there's a possibility that there's no UFOs or USOs.
All right. Ryan, hang on. We have a break taking over. We'll get to you when we come back from the break. Ladies and gentlemen, we will return right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. On the telephone is Ryan. Ryan, well, he left. Okay. Not only did Ryan leave, ladies and gentlemen, I have to inform you that during that break, we lost connection with Captain Robert McDonald. Now, we had a connection with him on Skype, and those of you who use Skype know that on Skype, when you're online, it shows that you're online. It's got a little green icon that shows you're online. Captain McDonald is offline. I don't know. I hope everything is okay with him. I will continue to try to get in touch with him. But there is no way that I can do so right now because he is offline. I take that to be not a good sign, and I don't want to raise alarm, and I don't want to say that anything is wrong, but that's a pretty unsettling sign right there, and I hope he comes back up online. If he does before the show is over, then I will, of course, bring him back on the air with us, but right now, connection is broken, and Captain Robert McDonald's computer is offline. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Yeah, Terry.
Shoot, I had just a couple questions for the captain there. He kind of threw me a whammy there. I was going to ask him why they were picking on him, and was the other ships in the Baltic, you know, that was, you know, checking us out, were they having just as much problems as he is, or why are they picking on him?
I think it's a good question, and I think it's a question he's got. In fact, he said, I don't know why they're doing this, other than maybe they think I saw something, and I saw nothing.
And then he said something about we downed. Is that correct? He said something about we downed one off every coast.
No, he didn't say that.
Or there is one off every coast.
What he said was that. What he said was that they have discovered now 58 of these things off of every. The coast of every major city in the world.
Well, I think it sounded like he said that we downed them. So
No, he didn't say that. Didn't say anything like that. Yeah.
It'd be kind of hard to down them just in them areas.
Yeah. No, he did not say that we or anybody had downed them.
Yeah. So he wouldn't. So that way he couldn't speculate on who or what they are then.
No, he doesn't know. He's just like you and me. I mean, he does not know what these things are, and it's not. His ship had an encounter with a USO 2 years ago, and apparently that's where all of this began. His problems with these men in black. That's apparently where it all began. But he did not say anybody downed any of these things, and he has not actually seen one of these things. As he said, he doesn't do any diving. He's not a deep sea diver. He was invited to be aboard some of these expeditions to videotape and to as a consultant. In certain waters. But, he doesn't know.
Yeah, it sounds like people who, two people standing there, and, you know, one person could know everything.
Okay, I'm going to have to cut you off because we're out of time, and Captain McDonald is back online. Captain McDonald, I don't know what happened, but you got cut off.
Yeah, we had a big power cut.
Oh,
really? The whole neighborhood went out.
The whole neighborhood went out. You know, that happened to me once in Phoenix. Yeah, right at showtime when we had a hot show that I had advertised that we were going to do, a show like this one. Well, there hasn't been another show like this one, but it was hot, and I advertised we were going to do it. Right at showtime, when we went on the air, our block went dead. And when we finished the showtime, I mean, I couldn't broadcast, but the instant the show should have been over, the electricity came back on.
Well, we don't have video footage. I can see that, but okay, I'm back. The power came back on suddenly as it shut off, but okay, I think I got enough of the message out. people.
Well, I think you did. And Terry, if you can ask your question in 30 seconds, go.
Well, I just got a new one. You said there's one off every coast, so are you expecting something to happen here real sooner or later?
Well, a lot of me and my friends kind of look at this as if when you place it on a map of where they are, if you look at another ship's captain, it appears to be like a chessboard or a checkerboard. A lot of people have their own predictions. I like the one I like the most is that it has something to do with the 2012 calendar and the way the Earth turns and where these things are located. It's almost my opinion that if something is coming towards us, let's say a meteor or what have you, these things are in the perfect location as the world turns. They're in the perfect location to intercept something. They're not causing harm. They're not doing anything wrong. They're actually docile and dormant. They're waiting for something. That's just an opinion.
All right, Terry, thanks for the call. We have time for one more call if you happen to call, like, right now. And then we're going to be out of time. Mysterious, the power outage. I was quite concerned when we lost contact with you and I saw you were offline. I got a little bit concerned about that. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Yeah, Brent.
Robert, I have one small piece of advice. You can do with it what you will. I am almost 90% certain you have been chipped because they cannot give you any... they do not know that strain of pneumonia you had.
That's right.
So these guys are wannabes. They play dirty, but they're still wannabes. If you can, lay low for a while and let them pass. Be patient.
Oh, I'm doing what I can. I'm not sailing a ship anymore at the moment, so I'm just preparing the next one.
All right, Brent, thank you so much for the call.
Well, thanks, Brent.
We'll have to let that be our last call, and I didn't get to any of the flash messages. I don't know if we got any flash messages because things have been, folks, in here it's been hectic trying to, you know, keep connection and so forth. So you hear me talking, and if you're watching, you see me, but you have no idea. You can't see everything I'm doing, so it's been pretty busy. So let's see. This is from Belgium, from Spardella Giulio. The implosion of the deep sea energy has not been discovered yet. Thank you, Kevin. Implosion energy. Okay. Let's see what else we have. If any others. And, okay. Could one genius like Tesla? No, that's yesterday. Okay. All right, that's going to have to do it for telephone calls and flash messages because we are, in fact, at the end of the show. Robert, I want to thank you for being with us, and I think you've taken a huge risk. It takes a lot of courage to do what you've done tonight, and I think you're very wise to have put all of this documentation in the hands of seven different people. I hope they are people who will keep their mouths shut. And
they're really good people, yeah.
If something does happen, then, and I hope it does not, but if it does, then these people are to release all of this to the news media, is that correct?
That's correct.
All right.
It will be released.
All right, stay on the line with me for a moment as we bring this one in for a landing. Folks, that's going to do it for this evening. I told you. Now we need you to stand with us and help us keep knocking it out of the park. Join our members community tonight, okay? My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long everybody.